Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. Streaking stocks, the S&P paces for its fifth straight month of gains. More firms chasing their targets higher today as well. And the investment committee debating how far your money can run now. Joining me for the hour, Joe Terranova, Jenny Harrington, Steve Weiss, Jim Labenthal. It's good to see everybody back here post nine. All right, final week of the month. You're coming off the best week of the year for the S&P and the Dow. And I guess the takeaway is doubt this market at your peril.
Absolutely.
Because all the talk about, you know, momentum is about to die or it's in the process of dying. Well, not so fast.
So Tony Pasquarello at Goldman Sachs wrote a phenomenal note, which you're going to read in a few minutes. And he basically summarizes all the things logically about 2024 in which an investor would have said, no, the correction's coming. OK, but the environment that you have is a tranquil environment. It is an environment where money is being treated well, not just in the Mag 7, but if you look at all of the S&P 500 equity sectors, in every equity sector, except maybe real estate and utilities. You go outside the US, Japan, UK, Europe, money being treated well. And I think that's absolutely the story. Limited volatility, logic, okay, right now suggests that you want to continue to be allocated. Look at crypto back bouncing back to 70,000. And last point on all of it, earnings revisions lowered since the beginning of the year. The estimates for the earnings in Q1 of 2024, for Q4 of 2023, called for 6.5% earnings growth. We're down to 3.7.
Weiss, the note that Joe references from Pasquarello, who as a head of hedge fund coverage over at Goldman Sachs, is basically, not only is the market, you know, resilient, it just has defied a lot of logic in the way that, you know, some have thought about what the market should be doing. He says, if you were told in early January that three of the Mag 7 stocks would trade lower in Q1, that registered equity supply would rise to the highest level since late 2021, that core inflation would surprise to the upside for two consecutive months, and in turn, the number of implied Fed cuts for 2024 would be halved, would you have guessed that U.S. equities would do nothing but melt higher? I think we know what the obvious answer is,
right?
There.
Yeah, so I read the note over the weekend, and he's right. But apparently a lot of people did, because that's how they're positioned. So, look, it's all about, all that's great to talk about. And Tony, we love his stuff. But all that matters is the Fed done, number one? And number two, when are they going to start cutting? So we know they're done. That's pretty obvious. In the last few press conferences, they made it very clear. And dot plots. And when are they going to start cutting?
Well, why do people try to make it more complicated than that? We've made a case on the downside and the upside.
Let me tell you why.
Don't fight the Fed works both ways. We've said it.
I said it
for more than a year.
Everybody's got to earn a living, Scott. That's why they make it more complicated. Because if they made it that simple, what would they do for work? Right? So the markets go up 85-90% of the time. That's obvious. What you guard against is you guard against that one tick down. Where you make your money is deciding where in the market that's going up do you put your money. And of course, that's been in the Mag 7.
But it's not like the people who've been negative the market are dummies. They point to real risks.
And there are
and
real
the
risks.
But the market has blown past almost every single risk that there is. Now, you got the chasers, obviously. Oppie raises their target this year to 5,500. Right. HSBC goes to 54. So, right, the market's blown. You could say it's whistling past a graveyard of potentially higher rates and a slower Fed and all that, but.
Look, here's what I'd say going forward, okay? Every time you see the VIX hit a new low, and we can argue all we want about the relevance of the VIX over the last few years, but every time you see it hit a new low, if you look at the chart against the S&P or NASDAQ, there's generally a blip. So are we coming ahead? Is there a blip coming? to me, that's going to be dictated by what we see with the next inflation numbers that come out. So it's purely, the only things that matter right now are what's inflation doing. Even if unemployment picks up, you're still going to be at record low unemployment. Not quite the record, but still for an ongoing period. So that's all that matters. So make your bet. So I think at this point that inflation is going to stay stubbornly high. And in reference to your point about some very bright people like Jamie Dimon,
right? It doesn't matter who they are. I mean,
there are
a lot of bright people who have been more negative.
Look,
because they've assumed that things that have happened through history
right.
would are going to happen again.
So,
Fed goes on this unprecedented hiking cycle
right.
for 18 months. Well, of course the market is going to roll over. Well, it did. But
then you get
to the other side
right.
and you start to focus more on the Fed rolling over also.
Well, there's a lot of unprecedented. But what I'd say is that, look, if you view as the more, I think investors have gotten a lot more patient because they've seen cycles in the past, and most notably, they saw the cycle in 22 when the market came down, and they all regret selling anything they sold because stocks have been double, triple, quadruple what they were. So here's how I'd say it plays out. Regardless of what happens with the Fed, if they go two times this year, if they go one time, as long as they go, it'd be a momentarily pricing destabilization of the market, but overall, as you look at a year, the market's going to be higher. So I say stay the course. You may want to change your positioning around. The stocks get too rich in certain areas. But overall, I think you stay the course.
Jenny, Raymond James today says this. I mean, at some point, the momentum has to turn. All three indexes have been above their 50-day moving averages for 19 weeks, longer than all but three brief periods in time over the last 20 years, with the average three-month returns negative after the previous time. So at some point, you dip below the 50, the 50-day moving average, and momentum has to turn. Wolf says, well, you're just going to keep pushing higher until you get more hot inflation prints.
Right, and I think I'm trying to get my cake and eat it too, right? So when you say, how can you be negative? Well, I'm negative, but I'm also 90% invested in our portfolio. I'm still sitting on that 10% cash position that I've been sitting on since the beginning of the year.
Why are you negative?
Well, for exactly everything's too high. If you look at the analyst forecast and you say like, okay, shoot, who was it who put the $5,500 price target out for S&P? That presumes $250 of earnings with a 22 times multiple. And that doesn't sound that comfortable to me. I'd rather see with the 10-year treasury at 4.3%, I'd rather see an 18 times multiple on the market. I'd rather see a 19 times, but 22 times, 21 times feels pretty rich to me. So when I say I'm negative, I'm not huge negative. Look, I'm mostly invested, but I'm still sitting on the cash from the three positions I sold for exactly the Raymond James reason, saying like, look, if the market pulls back 5 to 10%, that gives me three new positions in the portfolio that hopefully I can buy 5 to 10% cheaper. And by the way, when you're getting 5.5% yield on money market funds, you're kind of paid to sit on the sidelines. So I'm trying to ride both sides of it, which is, you know me, Scott, I've only been positive like twice since I started on this show 5 years ago, and that was at the worst of the pandemic and like the worst of 2018. I'm only really positive when the market's completely bottomed out. Otherwise, I'm always a little cautious. I'm always a little nervous. But as a professional investor, you know, you go to the Jim Labenthal school of thought, and you know that the smart move is to stay long and to stay fully invested, or in my case right now, at least mostly fully invested.
Morgan Stanley says, Jim, that 4.35% on the 10-year could be the yield threat for equities. It's the key technical level to watch in terms of what they suggest. So we've come through an important week. You know, the Fed's still at 3 cuts for the year. And last week we were saying, well, you know, before last week it was, well, the momentum trade is done. The Nasdaq's in danger of rolling over. The mega caps are finished. They're falling off one by one, right? And here we are. We got through a pretty big gauntlet last week, and we got within a whisker of 40,000 on the Dow.
Yeah, and we're still a whisker away from it. So 4.35% on the 10-year, I don't know that that's the particular line, but I will simply agree that higher 10-year rates could be a threat. That would happen if inflation continues to come down at not a fast enough rate. Now, let me parse through that for a second. Actually, let me just go to the heart of the matter. The PCE at the last reading was 2.4%. The core was 2.8%. We can hyperventilate all we want to about the CPI or the PPI. By the way, the the PPI numbers are below those numbers I just quoted. But at the end of the day, the Fed focuses on the PCE, in particular the core PCE. At 2.8%, frankly, I can see why they're not all that threatened at the moment. Maybe that'll change, but right now, they don't feel all that threatened, at least not enough to remove their three rate cut projection. So that feels good, in particular in the markets. It feels good for the broadening that has and is occurring. And let me just go on this for a second here. As much as we talk about the momentum trade and what the Mag 7 are doing or how it's disintegrating into the Fabulous Five, whatever that is, you cannot miss the fact that financials are doing better than technology year to date. Industrials are doing better than technology year to date. Energy is doing better than technology year to date. And by the way, healthcare and materials are having a pretty good year as well. So if you want to stay long this market, as I am, and as Jenny sort of just kind of pinched her nose and said she is as well, maybe it's time to just simply diversify, to go back to the old line school of thought that says diversification is your friend. I know, we all know that 2023, that was not the case, but in 2024, it is likely to be the case. Doesn't mean sell all your technology stocks, folks. It means diversify. No, there are other areas to invest in.
Your point is well made for this particular month. Mm-hmm. Comm services and tech are still the best sectors this quarter. Now, energy and financials are both up double digits. But to your point, technology is only the sixth best sector this month. Mm. So it trails energy, materials, comm services, utilities, and industrials. It does speak to that more broadening market that we were really focused on ahead of last week, mm-hmm. when we said, well, momentum looks tired as heck, needs a really big break perhaps, and you're going to get this broadening market. The question is, does that really happen? Does it really happen? Or do we just revert right back to where we were?
No, I think it happens. And I'll give a plug to Joe. I was looking at the performance of Joe T.
What's right? that?
So it's, but what I think is interesting is it's equal weighted and it's broad. And there are, what, 100 stocks in it? And it's actually having a better year than the market. And if you look at RSP, the equal weighted S&P 500 index, it's up about 6%, not quite as much as the market. But between looking at those, I think that proves the broadening out. And so to your point about comm services being the best, well, we know that that's really weighted to one stock. So I don't really focus too much on that.
But the sectors this month to me is more interesting than what has done well this quarter, right? Because that's how the conversation has been framed for the last couple of weeks, that as the sixth best sector technology, it was really tired, it needed a long break, and you're going to get the pickup trade from a lot of the underperformers like the energies and the materials and the utilities. I mean, now industrials have done quite well also, but this month's performance to me is more relevant to the conversation about where we may go from here.
That's interesting. Okay, so, but then you're arguing still that we continue to broaden out, or you think it's all?
I'm not arguing one way or the other. The whole argument last week before I left was we're broadening out and tech was going to need a long rest and the NASDAQ was in jeopardy. I came back and it feels like that conversation's now maybe done, that we're right back to where we were prior to the NASDAQ feeling like it needed a rest. If you look at the performance last week of a lot of these mega cap stocks, all of them but Apple were positive and some decidedly so last week.
I think there's kind of a cage match going on between the Russell 2000 and the NASDAQ. And what's been interesting to me to see are these days where, and so far NASDAQ's winning this year, maybe NASDAQ's winning in March also. But if you look at kind of the daily movements, there are days when Russell's up like 1.7, NASDAQ's down 50 basis points. And then the exact opposite. And it just seems like it's this really volatile match between those two, with the Dow and the S&P kind of stuck in the middle. I think they're sorting themselves out. I don't think that you look at March as the rest of the year. I think with the S&P being up 9% on the year, trading at 21 times earnings, it seems challenging for me that we end the year higher than that. So what does that say? That says if we're going to sustain that level, the tech needs to take a pause, the big winners so far year to date need to take a pause, and the rest of them need to continue to do the work.
I don't know why mega cap is necessarily going to take this long pause unless NVIDIA completely rolls over or has some disastrous earnings report that calls into question the pace of the AI monetization ordering and all this other stuff. Just like the market itself is buffeted by the fact that until the Fed doesn't cut at all this year, or cuts far less than the three that it still is priced in, then why is the market going to do bad?
Okay. Why is mega cap tech going to do bad until NVIDIA lays a big fat egg?
Why can't
maybe technology doesn't have to do bad. I'm certainly not saying that. I mean, I'm underweight technology, but I have a meaningful exposure. And that includes Apple. It includes Microsoft. It includes NVIDIA. So if I thought there were some trapdoor about to open under technology, I wouldn't even own those stocks. I think, though, your skepticism, and I'm hearing it as skepticism, is well placed. I mean, history says there's been an awful lot of false starts in this broadening to the rally. A question that I have is, you know, whether this is just sentiment. Whether people have looked and said, all right, it's Citigroup's time, it's General Motors' time. And Scott, I think you'll be one of the first to tell me that there have been a lot of false starts that I should have sold into when those stocks have rallied. I'm not doing that here. And the reason is because I think there is a moment of truth coming up. I do think it's first quarter earnings. Let me be more specific. My question is whether these stocks and the anti-technology, pro-cyclical trade is simply that, a trade, or if there's a fundamental basis to it. I believe very strongly there's a fundamental basis to it, but that question, whether it's sentiment or fundamentals, is likely to get a positive answer in the first quarter earnings reports. That's what I'm looking for, not the Fed. I don't care about the Fed at this point.
Well, I mean, maybe you should, because one of the big questions is whether the market is wholly delusional about the Fed itself and the number of cuts that seem to be priced in. Now, I know the Fed stayed at, you know, their outlook stayed at 3 cuts for the year, but the way the market is priced may not be exactly on the level with at least the way some in the Fed are talking, Bostic among them, who says he only sees one cut. Our senior economics reporter, Steve Leisman, is on that story for us today, because that is the big threat, it appears, Steve, is that the market gets itself really offsides to where the reality of the Fed currently sits.
Yeah, I mean, I think a little context is needed here, which is that the market has come a long way back to where the Fed was. But I think the Fed has moved a little bit in a way that the market is not necessarily giving it credit for. You mentioned Bostic. He moved from 2 to 1 cut. You had Lisa Cook this morning, Fed governor, really squarely in the middle, talked about a need to have a cautious approach to rate cuts. And I think looking at the dots, Scott, might give you some clue as to really what was the overall tenor of the sense of the committee. And these dots obviously are their forecasts for where they think the funds rate should be 2024. What you'll see is a bit of a shift to the right. And when I say to the right, towards fewer cuts. What happened is there were a bunch of folks who said, you know what, we think the Fed's going to cut more. We think the Fed ought to cut more than 3 times. Well, they came back into the middle, and one of the folks went the other way as well. So really, this idea of 3 cuts hangs on by a single forecast of a single member of the 19 members of the committee. So the question is, has the market priced the precariousness of the 3 cuts appropriately? That's my concern.
So PCE this week, how good, in quotes, how good do you think that has to read for the Fed to make that move of cutting for the first time? I don't know how realistic it is to think that, you know, April 30th to May 1st, that meeting, it's even a possibility. But let's just say June. How good does the PCE need to be this week?
Well, I mean, first of all, the expectation for the PCE, Scott, is for really little change. It's kind of been written off a little bit. So if you're asking me what kind of upside surprise would put May back in play, I think a substantial upside surprise would put May back in play. However, you got to take note that the economists have gotten be pretty good at taking the CPI and the PPI and figuring out what PCE is going to be over on the other hand here. So I wouldn't expect much of an upside surprise there. What I'm focused on, Scott, is what happens in March and April, or with the March and April data that might go forward and give that green light to a cut in June. And my concern here is that March right now doesn't look like it's going to be much better than February has been. And that's going to be key. If we're on track for a June cut, if we're on track for 3 cuts, you've got to get that March data under your belt. And it's got to be, I think, better than we've seen before. We can't continue to disappoint here, or at least show no progress and expect the Fed to cut in the face of little progress on inflation.
Yeah, or I mean, that's kind of Wolf's point when it comes to the stock market itself. You can't keep putting in these hot prints and expect the stock market to remain as resilient as it has. And Jim Lamenthal's
Go ahead.
Because Jim Lamenthal's got something.
I was going to say, take your bet. Take your bet. If you think March is going to be great, then go ahead and bet on Fed cuts. If you don't think so, then maybe you want to be a little bit more, introduce a little more risk into your outlook.
Steve, let me hit a ground ball to you, see how you field this one. Let's just say the CPI stays with a 3 handle and the PCE stays with a 2 handle and rate cuts are pushed off. There's a lot of data that says long pauses, as we're in right now, are good for the markets. I would suggest to you that it's the tail wagging the dog, to phrase it that way. Long pauses are reflective of the fact the economy is hanging in there and that the Fed doesn't need to cut to save the economy. And by the way, you know, 2% handle on PCE, 3% handle on CPI, I could make a pretty strong argument that that's a positive environment for stocks.
I think all that's true, Jim. And as you know, I have my feet shoulder length apart. My glove is down on the ground. My head is up and my knees are bent and I am ready to go on that. I think you're right about that. I mean, the extent to which all of this is a decent environment for stocks. Look, don't forget the good news here. The good news is that we're probably dialed out of rate hikes here. So that's not going to happen. The question is this. Are you getting the offset? If you don't get the rate cuts, are you getting it in better GDP? Are you getting it in at least constant inflation so it's not a big question for you? All that, I think, is a decent offset. I'm just saying, you can't take a dot to the bank, Jim. And if that's what you're doing, and I don't think you're doing this, then I think you're making a mistake. You got to be really careful that you're thinking about the risk that March doesn't show the improvement that green lights the June cut.
By the way, I did see a highlight the other day of a baseball going right through the first baseman's gloves webbing. So errors can still happen.
Happens
even when
you're the best.
Even when you're in position.
The best of them.
Yeah. All
right,
Steve.
And now you're talking about forecasting the Fed and inflation, right?
Yeah. Good.
And I mean, sometimes they left their glove in the damn dugout.
Yeah. Steve, thanks. I appreciate that. Steve Leisman, our senior economics reporter. Kate Rooney has a news alert for us related to, I think, FTX. Kate?
Hey, Scott. So FTX's bankruptcy estate has agreed to sell about 2/3 of its stake in the buzzy AI startup Anthropic. This is according to bankruptcy filings. As we reported on Friday, there is now a major sovereign wealth fund on the cap table when it comes to Anthropic. It's now confirmed filings show that the UAE's Mubadala is one of Anthropic's new investors. That is one of the UAE's sovereign funds. They're buying a stake for about $500 million. We reported on Friday that the UAE was interested and that Anthropic said they wouldn't accept any investments from the Saudis in the PIF because of national security risks. That was according to sources. The reason this Anthropic stake is for sale at all belongs to FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried's failed crypto exchange. It is being unloaded as part of the bankruptcy process there. These sales today that we're hearing about make up about 2/3 of FTX's stake, so worth about $880 million. Another major backer, full circle, Jane Street is now on the cap table. That's where Sam Bankman-Fried began his career. There is another fund on there affiliated with Fidelity as well. These sales are subject to bankruptcy court approval, though. Scott, back over to you.
I appreciate that. Kate Rooney, thank you very much. Coming up, another big story we're following today. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun stepping down. Steve Weiss just bought the stock on Friday, so we get a trade update from him on that. We do have more stocks on the move as well. We're back in 2 minutes.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Visit odfl.com to learn more.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
All right, welcome back. Boeing shares are higher today. You see right there, a little less than 2%. That after news that CEO David Calhoun announced he's stepping down at the end of the year. So you bought the stock on Friday?
As a final trade.
We're just trying to capture something, and are you still in it?
I am, only because I have to be, because CNBC rules, but I'll be getting out of it. Look, it was apparent to me that going on the roadshow, the board, without Calhoun meant that he was out, and that the customers who publicly supported him said enough's enough. Let's make the change.
You need some more. You need some more. Well, you look like you're struggling. I'm gonna pass it to Jimmy for a minute. Let you.
I'm actually good now.
Oh, you're good. Okay,
good.
Go ahead.
So the problem here is they need a new CEO and they need a new board. Some of the board members aren't standing for re-election, but at the end of the day, it's not like a normal company you could turn around. It's got an extensive manufacturing problem and a culture that's got to be reversed. And you've got to look to the outside. Historically, they've looked from the inside. So first you have to identify somebody. No question in my mind they'll get somebody, but I think it's a very long workout. Now, what's better here than
a duopoly, that's the...
I was just going to get to that.
That's the default line that everybody always comes back to against the negativity on a Boeing.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a duopoly. What are you going to wait? When do you want your planes?
And I was going to say that. Not only is it a duopoly, you've got their competitor, Airbus, that can't fill the orders they have. They've got a multi-year backlog. So that makes it okay. But in the interim, what are the concessions they're going to have to give to the airlines? Look at United Airlines. You've got heightened investigation because wheels are coming off, other safety issues. The FAA wants to know whether it's United or whether it's Boeing that's doing that. So the bottom line is it's going to be such a long workout. We're going to be in the same place 6 months, a year, year and a half from now because production is so below what it should be. So that means the balance sheet's still constrained, in my view. Mm-hmm. So it's a good trade, and it was a trade on new management, which I've been calling for years, but I just don't think it's going to be a great stock.
Now, your guy over to your left was shaking his head, which is so interesting because here is somebody who defended Boeing forever, even amid his anger over some of the other issues that have happened in the past handful of years, then finally got fed up and sold the stock. So what's your take now?
Yeah, the CEO is not the story here. This is not a one-man show. It's not the board of directors. That's not how you fix this company.
No,
this company is going to take
the buck stops at the top.
So what? I mean, let's not get stuck on that. I want to make the point I'm making. This is not like somebody comes in and it's some DNA splice of Jack Welch and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. That doesn't fix this, okay? This is a culture that's 25 years in the making. This goes back to McDonnell Douglas acquisition back in the late 1990s. And what you've got here as a situation is to turn this around, profits have to get plummeted here. We can talk, and I have in the past, about the duopoly. That's still true, and that's a reason why the company needs to survive. But right now, the FAA is going to slow walk everything on Boeing. They're going to slow walk production increases. They're going to slow walk new plane certifications.
So you wouldn't buy the stock like Weiss did?
Absolutely not.
I'm a seller. I'd be a seller.
I know.
He's making
he's playing
it, clear
it for a trade.
In.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
Why is everyone acting like it's such a great performance? The stock's up 1%.
It's because it has no overhanging issues.
I'm going to lay out more problems. Supposedly, the solution here, at least in part, is that Boeing buys Spirit Aerospace Systems. Okay, so they're going to pay up for that, and then pretty much immediately, and they've kind of hinted at this, they're going to have to divest the Airbus business. You think Airbus wants Boeing building their planes for them? I'll let that hang for a second. They're going to divest that business, so immediately the value of that acquisition is going to go down. You got the airlines. The airlines are not happy. The airlines are not their friends right now. You just pointed this out. I mean, I could go on and on. Oh, by the way,
I don't know if the Spirit acquisition goes through, by the way.
The union wants a new deal as well. I mean, we're piling on here. This is not a stock to buy right now.
Okay, what about Cliffs, which is hitting a new 52-week high today? They announced they won an award negotiations for funding from the DOE on two projects.
Yeah, you know, this is very interesting. I talk quite often about the economic prospects for Cleveland-Cliffs, which I find quite promising. But if you talk to the CEO, Lorenzo Gonsalves, he quite often, if you give him time, will talk about the decarbonization that's going on at the company. And this is very bright for the future of the company. And now the DOE sees it and is going to help fund their continuing use of hydrogen as opposed to coal and other sources, other fossil fuels to fuel their mills and their plants. Very positive for the stock, but very positive for the environment as well. And by the way, this is another indication that the government very much likes Cleveland Cliffs, and that has some implications for the U.S. steel deal.
What about Arista Networks, Joe? Got removed today from Citi's focus list due to valuation. Shares are up 80% in the last year.
Finally, we get to the catalyst of why the market's going up, and it's AI. And that's the story. Why are they removing it from the list? I have no idea. They're talking about valuation. Trades currently at 49 times. In 2018, it traded at 85 times. In 21, it traded at 60 times. The real story, what we should be speaking about, is the 40% revenue growth that they're achieving over the last eight quarters. If you listen to Broadcom's earnings call, what are they talking about? They're talking about AI networking and the usage of Ethernet, which is exactly where this company is. They're in the AI halo. If you want to build out the infrastructure of networking, this company is where you turn.
They didn't downgrade it. They just took it off the focus list.
I want it on the focus list because the focus of the market right now is AI, and that's where this company is.
Well, maybe it was on the focus list. Now it's up 30%. They want to put something else in focus. Think of that?
Portfolio management, my friend.
Cleveland Cliffs or Boeing.
Bertha Coombs has the headlines for us. Hi, Bertha.
Hi, Scott. Unsealed in federal court today, the Department of Justice is charging seven Chinese nationals for conducting a 14-year-long campaign of hacks against U.S. companies for China's civilian intelligence service. The indictment also alleges the targeting of U.S. and foreign officials, including high-ranking White House officials and multiple U.S. senators. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu canceling a planned visit by a high-level delegation to Washington as a sign of protest against the UN Security Council's vote to demand a ceasefire in Gaza during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which passed 14-0 with the U.S. abstaining. By allowing the vote to pass without a condition to release hostages held by Hamas, Netanyahu accused the U.S. of retreating from a principled position. And more than 140 years after construction began, officials in Spain just announced that the Sagrada Familia Church in Barcelona will be finished in 2 years after work on the six towers on the basilica is completed. Once it's finished, the masterpiece, originally started in 1882, will be the world's largest church. It is one of the most amazing structures ever. I love that church, Scott.
I've seen it myself.
It'll ever be finished.
I've seen it myself, I think, about 9 years ago. So it's nice to hear that news. Bertha Coombs, thank you very much. All right, coming up, a flood of analyst activity. We're going to trade our top calls of the day on streaming, the banks, tech, and more. We'll find out how the committee is positioned on all that next. All right, calls of the day. Jenny, starting with Disney, which got a price target raised today at Barclays, $135 for $95. Upgraded as well to overweight. Said shares could move more than 15%. Narrative reset they're talking about. They're going to lead the charge. Those are the words they use when it comes to sports streaming and cord cutting. 52-week high today for that stock. And, of course, we have the proxy fight, which is ongoing and coming to a head very soon.
Right. And narrative reset is really the key here. So way back last summer when it was at 79, what we were saying is it reminded us, frankly, of when Meta was at 89, where everyone just hated it so much. And what we were saying then is, this is a leading company. Like, people love Disney. It is an iconic brand with loyal shareholders. They've always led. They'll continue to lead. So it's nice to see that start to be appreciated. Now it's appreciated too because they've had a few good earnings reports. They've returned to earnings growth. There's some clarity. The valuation's reasonable right now. It's trading at 23 times earnings. Earnings are expected to grow at 24% this year, 17% next year, 11%. So it's very much back on track. But I think it's interesting when you say there's 15% upside. I think that's what there is. There's probably 15% upside. I don't think it's a double from here.
You know, the one thing that's interesting to me is that streaming profitability is still projected for the end of the fiscal year. So that's September 30th. That's not far away. Once that happens, the narrative then shifts to how profitable. And I think that's where you might get another leg up. You've talked about some things. And obviously, you know, ESPN, Hulu hangs out there. But what if we start talking about streaming profitability and it becomes a meaningful contribution to the net income story at Disney? I think that's the next leg.
I'm going to take this from a different angle, the angle that I began to take it from in December, where I said the stock technically looks really, really good. That's when it was in the 90s. Now the stock looks phenomenal. This stock is breaking out. It's held the gap
from early February. It's above all its critical moving averages, and there are no momentum funds. There are no funds that are really allocated in the direction of Disney.
Yet.
This is one.
Yet. I'm thinking of one in particular. I know where he's going.
This is one of the best looking momentum stocks in communication services.
But at the same time, I'll argue, and this is as a
holder. Why does it have to be a but?
Because I think math matters here. You know, and I don't see how a Disney starts to trade at 30 times or 40 times. I think it really should have kind of a reasonable, slightly premium to the market multiple on it. You know, and the earnings growth is
in early 2021.
It's not infinite. It's not like an NVIDIA earnings growth. It's a finite amount of earnings growth.
I want you to be excited about your investment. In early 2021, this was a $200 stock.
Okay.
If you can get Nelson
that
Peltz.
That was then, this is now.
If you can get Nelson Peltz, if you get Nelson Peltz in the board, and the board to have some synergy, to cooperate on some good vision for this company, why can't it go back?
What's that boardroom going to look like if Iger's still CEO?
The reason why I can't is because I think getting back to $10 of earnings is very difficult. And when we initially bought it, that was the thesis, like that it will return to $10 of earnings. I think it will one day.
I'm daring you to dream. I'm daring you to dream.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, you have a great technical momentum, the likes of which you have not had in this company in years.
Okay, Netflix, why? Its price target goes to $6.60 from $5.55 at Citi. They still reiterate it neutral, but they do hike target. I mean, it's at shy of $6.30 now, so. You know, it blew past their other target, so they had to make a move.
They had to make a move, and I'm sure he's telling accounts when they call him, look, forget what I'm saying here, buy it. They're the winner, pure and simple. Not only they're the winner, they're the profitable. It's an easily told story. Here's what we are, here's what we do. They're expanding what their offerings are. So look, it's a small position for me, unfortunately, and I'm not adding more at this level, but I'm also not selling it. I'm just gonna ride it because you're gonna see with all these, look, unfortunately or fortunately, my family subscribes to virtually every streaming service, and you're seeing prices go up. So people are going to have to make decisions. Which do I want to keep? You can't keep them all now. When they were $7.99 a month, you could, but now it's real money coming out of real budgets. And so I think you'll see Netflix pick up more subscribers as others lose.
Jimmy, Mike Mayo at Wells Fargo Securities goes on Citi to 80 from 70. He cites it as his quote-unquote signature pick.
Yeah, Mike's been very bullish on this, as have I, and I think this is now a time for Citi to just simply execute. Jane Fraser has laid out the plan. She's been executing on it, frankly, for several years. Now it's a time to just show the fruition of expense cutting and the rationalization of the international business. And I want to make one more point about Jane Fraser. She actually is investing in some key business. She'd made some hires in investment banking and wealth management that could play out nicely. Those are not areas that Citigroup is very well known for. Maybe they will be in the future.
All right, Accenture and IBM named in B of A Note as the best position to capture new AI and Gen AI revenue streams. So Accenture, the price target goes to 419. That's considerable upside from where it's trading now, Joe. You have it in the Joe T.
Yeah, I don't like, first of all, I didn't like the earnings report for Accenture. IT spending looks to be a little bit challenged. You heard the same thing from Adobe. The response to that has been negative. The stock has been pulling back to its critical moving averages. I think it's at a very important moment in determining, number one, what we do with the position, but number two, if it's going to break down further, which I think it looks like it's got the probability to do.
Jenna, you have the IBM part of this, and the price target's 220.
Right, and when I was on 2 weeks ago, another analyst upgraded it to a 220 price target then, too. That was interesting, because they weren't saying higher revenues or earnings. They were just giving it multiple expansion. Now we're seeing analysts start to come out and say, hey, there's this big piece of revenue that's up for grabs, and it's going to be earned, it's going to be taken by the older school companies like Accenture and IBM. I think there is wind at the back here. I think 220 should be easy to achieve.
All right, when we come back, we have your playbook on this month's best sector. Some positive notes from a couple of firms on it today. We will discuss first, though, we will discuss these markets with Mike Santoli. His Midday Word is next. We're back with our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli. He's here with his Midday Word. You're writing today about 4 years, hard to believe, 4 years from the COVID low, and asking the question, how healthy is this bull market?
Yeah, Scott. I mean, first of all, nothing but stellar returns on almost every look back period. So 4 years, you're talking about 25% plus annualized total return. 15 years, you want to go back to the great financial crisis low, you're talking about 15% plus. closer in, though, we've only just kind of got rolling after that mini bear market in 2022. So you have valuations, no doubt full at minimum, maybe rich, 21 times forward of the S&P 500. Last time we were here was early 2022. Excuse me. What was ahead of us then? Well, 500 points of Fed tightening and a little bit of an earnings recession that really hit the average stock. So unless you think that something similar is here, valuation is not really the thing to do it. I think that the chart focused people like this market most, and fundamental types are trying to come around into that. So it's one of those, you trust the trend as long as it lasts, you expect the market to cool off, the tremendous momentum surge in the high momentum stocks, you had to believe was either going to cool off the easy way or the hard way. So far, it looks like the easy way with a lot of these stocks going sideways.
They also look like last week was a bit of a comeback, just to remind everybody, We ain't dead yet.
Without a doubt. I mean, there really hasn't been much of a payback period, not only for those stocks, but the overall index right now. I actually think the Fed was just good enough. It's fine. This is not an economy or a market feeling like it really needs 25 or 75 basis points of cuts to operate well.
Right, I'll see you on the bell. Mike, Thank you. That's Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator. Coming up next, energy keeps climbing. It is the second best sector today and this month, plus one big firm just upgrading, another firm today talking about how positive commodities could be moving forward, which is why we got the committee's playbook next. All right, we're back. Let's talk some energy. Why? Because Jenny Morgan Stanley today upgrades energy to overweight, and Goldman says commodities are going to gain as central banks cut rates. Copper, aluminum, oil products are forecast to see the best returns in terms of what Goldman sees. I'll come to you first because you've got some pretty big exposure in energy in general. One Oak, Shell, Williams, Pioneer, Total Energies, Kinder, Energy Transfer, Enterprise Products. How are you thinking about the space?
So most of our energy concentration is in the midstream space, and I like that because to me it's a safe play on the continued use of fossil fuels. I think it was interesting the way you framed it, Scott, talking about both commodities and oil prices, because I think there's a big difference there. So when we think about iron and copper, I think those are really demand driven and there's limited supply. On the oil side, on the oil and gas side, I think what's so interesting is ever since oil prices went negative in 2020, what I've seen is tremendous control over the price of oil come in. And no one's really saying it, but you can see that the major oil producers are really trying to keep oil in a range, I think, of like high 60s to low 90s, because they know that that's a sweet spot of profitability. They never want to get so crazy again as to see things go negative. And when it gets to 150, the share prices don't benefit. So I like playing this kind of middle of the road space in the midstream companies where the oil just goes back and forth, and they're doing great this year. Energy Transfer, Enterprise, One Oak, Magellan, they're all up 10% plus on the year, and they have 7% yields. That, to me, is a really good place to be.
Joe, Diamondback, talk about momentum. It's trying for its 15th straight day of gains. That'd be the longest rally since mid-2014, so a decade. You have that in the tee.
So energy, and I absolutely agree with everything that Jenny said. And in the MLPs, one other name you didn't mention was Targa Resources, TRGP.
You
want to talk about momentum? That's to the moon. But energy itself, Scott, I think you focus on energy equities right now. Ignore what you're seeing in the spot price of oil, because that's not your reason for being overweight energy right now. Yes, the spot price is lifted above $80, but in general, the entirety of the commodity complex is benefiting from very strong demand and a supply dynamic that's been managed really well the last couple of years by the commodity producers themselves. So in the case of the XLE, I think you're at a one-year high. Mm-hmm. The XLE is about to challenge its November of 2022 high. And if you get above there, you're talking about going back to 101, which is where it traded in 2014. Energy equities, I think right now, should be the investor focus. And one other point that Adam Parker wrote a great note over the weekend talking about, now you're actually going to see energy as the one sector where you're going to get the acceleration in earnings growth, and you haven't had that.
Exxon, Transocean, Cheniere, you're overweight.
Yeah, so everybody's talking about crude oil, and there's a reason we're not talking about natural gas. But remember, natural gas is right at the same price in April of 2020 that Jenny was referring in crude oil. You could easily get a rally in natural gas that will add to the energy stock rally.
All right, we're going to bounce for a couple minutes. We'll come back. We'll do final trades on the other side. I hope you'll join me on Closing Bell, 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Adam Parker, Meera Pandit, Lo Tony's going to be with us. We'll continue to follow the Reddit trade, talk about big tech regulations, and everything encompassing tech, of course, with the VC Low Tony. I hope you'll join me then. Let's do finals. Farmer Jim.
Yeah, if you're
what
looking
you got for me,
if you're looking for one stock that is on the verge of breaking out, the momentum looks good, but there's still runway to run. John Deere.
All right. Tractor. You buy one yet?
Oh, that hurts.
No. No. Weiss?
He bought a Komatsu. ASML. ASML is just a great story. It's really under the radar. Yes, a number of buys on it, but they will be the lead in the second half for AI.
Okay. Jenny Harrington.
No breakout here, just a solid 8.4% dividend yield on Sabra Healthcare, which is a solid, very well-managed healthcare real estate investment trust.
All right, Joe T.
Got a reasonable valuation stock that is breaking out, Steel Dynamics, STLD.
All right, look at it there with a nice little move today. All right, see you at closing bell. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.